Howdy! Thanks for tuning into Orion Photo Group's exclusive podcast. For each episode, we're going to dive into the lives of OPG's photographers and videographers across the country. We're going to talk shop, hear their stories, and listen to any advice they want to offer us up. So grab a tasty beverage and settle in for some fun conversations featuring our little community. That's you. Let's go! All right, another episode of Success Stories with the Orion Photo Group. Today, I have a very special guest that I did a little partying in Vegas with a couple weeks ago. His name is David Bowles. Am I saying that right? Bowles, is that correct?
No, yeah, you said it right. Good job.
For all of these, I always should be asking that question. I've probably done this a million times. Anyway, David is from California, and I've gotten to know him a little bit. We have a lot of mutual friends, and it was nice that we connected in Vegas, kind of by chance. We went to a dinner together. But David is from Sacramento, right? Am I have that right?
No, I'm in Southern California.
So Southern California. Sorry.
Yeah, LA. I say LA, but I live in Lancaster, so I'm about an hour from LA.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Like outside of LA, I don't. Other than I had a friend who lived in Agoura Hills, that was pretty much it. That's my knowledge of LA.
Yeah. No. I mean, LA is huge. So we're actually where I live is the very last, like, border of LA County. So I'm about an hour, 20 minutes north of LA. And then if I go any further out, it becomes another county. So
gotcha. Is that south, west?
It's east. North. Yeah. North.
Okay.
North of LA.
Gotcha. Cool. All right. Well, first of all, I'm glad that you're here today. And I've gotten to know David a little bit. We had a really fun dinner at the, what was the name of the place?
Something
beer garden. It was a beer garden in Vegas. Oh my gosh. And there's one here in St. Louis. I'm totally blanking on the name. And it was a beer garden in Vegas. Very popular. They have the big horns and, everyone dresses up in Lederhosen, I think it's called. not us, the wait staff. They're rude and they serve gigantic beers. And wiener schnitzels. So it was a pretty good time in that sense. And then they paddle you. Were you one of the paddlers?
I did not get paddled. No, absolutely not.
So part of their thing, they spank people with paddles, and it's pretty entertaining. So it was a fun night out in Vegas, as always. Vegas is always a good time, and it was fun to share that with you.
Yeah, thank you.
So David has been with the Orion Photo Group for a couple of years now, right?
Yeah. Actually, I pretty much started my wedding career with you guys. I want to say it's been about 4 years, and I shot about a year before that, just kind of getting my feet wet. And then I dived into Orion and kind of just launched my career from there. So
yeah, and that's kind of what I want to talk to you a little bit about, because you're definitely one of the younger, newer photographers that I've interviewed in these podcasts. So I kind of want to get into that. I don't want to say that you're at the beginning of your career, but you're in the early stages of your career as compared to somebody like myself. And you have definitely done that. So one of the things that I want to share is that I'm a fan of your work and the work that you've created. I'm only looking at your portfolio on George Street here. And just really beautiful, vibrant colors, and I can tell that you've been working really hard. You have a good sense of off-camera lighting as well as available light. I want to get into that a little bit as well. But let's just start kind of at the beginning. How did you get started in photography? And you've been at it about 10 years, which for me is still a new person for me. But you've been at it about 10 years. Talk to me about the beginnings of your career.
So I picked up a camera. I picked up a camera when my son was born. So, you hear the term mom tog, I guess. You could call me a dad tog. So when my son was born, I bought my first digital camera. I was always into like photography and stuff. One of my best friends who I kind of say that he's the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing is he really got me into photography and pushed me. So, you know, he told me, "Hey, just buy a Canon Rebel and just play with that." So I
Good
bought my
advice.
first camera in 2007. At this
Yeah.
time, I was a chef, so I was going to culinary school around the same time, and I was working in the industry as well. And I shot for about 2, 3 years, and I just kind of like shot everything. I didn't really have a style yet. I was still trying to see what I wanted to shoot. I always gravitated towards people, though. Being a musician, I was always shooting like bands and stuff like that. And then I got really successful in my culinary career that I had to put photography on the back burner for a little bit. So I ended up just selling everything. I sold all my gear and I just kind of went full steam ahead and into the culinary industry and worked for some of the biggest chefs in LA and around the world. I did some traveling and then always felt like there was a piece of me missing, and I think that was photography. So I bought a camera again. I bought a Sony and I stuck with the Sony system for a long time, and I think that really helped develop my style and where I went into my photography. I never thought I would shoot weddings. I never was somebody who wanted to shoot weddings. And you know, I ain't gonna lie, what drew me to weddings in the first place was always the money. And then I shot my first wedding and I fell in love because it reminded me of being in a kitchen without having to be in a kitchen. Like that controlled chaos is something I was so used to from being a chef that there was so much similarity between being a chef and being a wedding photographer that like I developed this analogy of how like you know you start your day at a restaurant, the first thing you do is prep. You start your day as a wedding photographer, the first thing you
Details,
do is
crap.
prep and details, right? So it just I fell in love with it, and I don't think I would do anything else really.
That's a great story. And when I was in high school trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, being a chef was one of those things. I love cooking, and I almost went the route of working in a kitchen and becoming a chef, and somehow photography found me. But I always wonder what would have happened if I had gone that route. I actually was looking into like going into the military and becoming a chef, like getting my degree in the military. But then my dad was like,
Dude,
you were
that's
not
yeah.
military. You were not military.
I've met some chefs from the industry that started their career that way, and then my brother was actually in the army too, and he had some friends that was in the military cooking, and he says that is like the worst military job you can get. And
It's
I was like,
usually like
yeah,
the
I
job they
believe
give to
it.
people when they're punishing.
Yeah, no, it's like the worst job. Like if you go in there and you ever see that like I think he's like in the army now, they're peeling potatoes all day. Like that's your job.
Great movie, by the way. Yeah,
Yeah.
for sure. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, but I love that analogy, though. I think you're absolutely right, because cooking is definitely very, my wife likes to bake,
Okay.
and I don't like to bake, because baking is
Yeah.
very much formulaic. You got to put this much in. You don't deviate. When you're cooking, you're making soup or pasta or whatever it may be. You're throwing a little this in there. You're throwing a little
Yeah.
that in there. You're tasting it. You're figuring things out. And photography is very much the same thing. Like, you know, with the way you work with light, and you're mixing some off-camera lighting, and you're doing this and that. And there's no right formula, but you know what looks right. So that's a really
Exactly.
interesting analogy. I really love that. So you began shooting some weddings, and you know your story is very similar too. Oh, I think they're very it's a very mixed bag, as far as I think I would say at least 50% of the people who shoot weddings said they would never shoot weddings ever, and then I think the rest of the 20 or 5 or 30 years of their career is a love-hate relationship. That's a neat story. So then you started working with Orion, and I know that you've shot a lot of jobs. Well, actually, you started as an associate. Is that correct?
Yeah, I started as an associate. I think I want to say like my first year,
Yeah.
I think I shot like 50 or 60 weddings with Orion,
You did.
which was crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I would literally get emails and it would just be like, boop, 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 boop. I'm like, all right, cool, I'm busy this week. And then obviously, you know, the situation happened and things slowed down a little bit. And then after that, it really slowed down. But it was good because my own business picked up. So it just kind of worked out.
That's great. And you know that the thing, you are one of the photographers that I wanted to talk to you in that transition from associate to a lead. And I want to talk about that a little bit. So, you know, one of the, I think the great things about working with OPG is that, as an associate, you really get an opportunity. You work with other photographers. Everything that you know, shoot, you can use for your portfolio, and then you build that portfolio so that you can become a lead with OPG. And then, of course, you can build your own portfolio and start getting your own job. So I just want to, let's start with like, you were working with other OPG photographers, and I want you to talk about that experience a little bit.
Yeah, so it always seemed to be there was like probably three OPG photographers that I always found myself working with a lot, which was good because then we were able to build a relationship and you know go into the wedding like knowing how they shoot and they know how I shoot. One of my friends, he works for the company still. And I mean, we've become good friends to the point like, you know, we're always hanging out or shooting people's pictures. Like, hey, how do you like, what do you think about this? And
That's
so it's
great.
cool. But you know, there are also times where you might work with somebody where you don't mesh well. And you just have to still be professional and still, you know, shoot the day because at the end of the day, you're there for the couple. So it doesn't really matter. And I always try to like put that in the back of my head and it doesn't matter if I'm shooting for OPG, my own company, or associated for somebody else. Like, I always shoot it like it's my own, regardless. So.
And that and you know, the couple things that, you know, I want to mention there that's great is that as an associate was, you know, generally an associate, I think you had a little bit more experience than maybe some other associates that start with us. But
Yeah.
let's say you don't have a lot of experience. What you're going to gain in being an associate with us is that you're going to work with other photographers. You're going to have to learn how to work with people maybe that you might not like. And that means that's kind of across the board in our industry too. So maybe not in that scenario where it's associate and photographer, you're working together as a team, but there are lots of times when you have to work with really just bad videographers or people that you don't want to behave themselves. And I was just talking with somebody yesterday who was talking about how the videographer or the photographers were not you know, playing nice with him. So this is good, valuable stuff that I think a lot of people don't realize how valuable that watching it live and how somebody deals with it. You can learn a couple things. One, you could learn how not to do it if they're handling it
Definitely.
properly. I have been on many occasions where I work with a videographer where all I did was approach him and he'd like freaked out on me, and I didn't even say anything. And I'm like, we're just here to work together. And then he still starts screaming at me. I've gotten into fist fights with videographers on the dance floor. True story. The guy threw a punch at me one day during a hora in the middle of a big Jewish wedding, and it was pretty bad. He gave me a shiner. It was we had been fighting all night, and I don't know, I said something to him off the cuff, and maybe my behavior wasn't the best. So it happens to the best of us. But as an associate, you learn how to do these things, and you would learn that as an assistant if you went out as well. So I think that is valuable too in working with somebody that you may not like. Now, it wasn't an accident that you were shooting with the same photographers all the time, because those lead photographers said, I like David, I want to work with him as much as possible. So that's the other advantage of working as an associate with us. You can work with leads that you know, and any associate that's listening to this broadcast should know that you can request a photographer, and vice versa. As a lead, you can, and you know, we do the best that we can to match it. We want it to be a good team. We want good chemistry. So that part I think is really good. But I also want, I'd love for you to kind of talk a little bit about gathering your images from shooting OPG weddings and building your portfolio a little bit, because I can see that you've really worked hard at that.
I mean, my style now, at least, like the work that you see on OPG, I think is more geared towards what OPG's look is. But as far as my style, I'm a very kind of cinematic. I hate to use the word dark and moody, but I'm very, I called it bold imagery. That's what I like to kind of associate it with. So when I would shoot weddings, I would always shoot it to be able to have retain some images. Like I would always look for creative angles because that's what I like to, think outside the frame is what I call it. So, you know, but then I would get the safety shots, the clean shots, the shots that I know that OPG is going to want, you know, that the couple's going to want, those very classic poses and stuff like that. So that way when I would go back and deliver the projects, and another thing too is, you know, with OPG, we deliver a certain way. I would always retain, I would always shoot double, like JPEG and RAW, so I'd right. have the flexibility to change and manipulate it to be my style later on. But yeah, I think it was just pick and choosing certain weddings that I think felt like were more geared towards, you know, the aesthetic that I would want to show on my portfolio later on down the road. And, same thing with like couples, you know, they always say find your couple. So when I would shoot certain OPG weddings, if I meshed really well with the couple and it was a couple that I would want to see in my portfolio, I would definitely kind of like flag those and be like, all right, I'm going to use these later on in my own work. So, yeah, I don't know.
No, I love that. And I think you touched on something that is really important. So like, you know, the styles that you send us raw files when you shoot with us, you upload your large JPEGs and, we take that and then we edit it from there. So we're going to match the style that the client has hired us for.
Of course.
And then you're taking the raw files and then you're using it for what, you know, works for you. And I think your style is definitely your wedding photography, your personal wedding photography is miles away from the style of George Street by Design and, you know, our other brands. So, I think that's a good point that you can still shoot with us, even though, you know, it may not look exactly like, you can have a different style, right? At the end of the day, it's the processing at the end. You're delivering good clean files and then you're taking those good free files and doing what you want with them. And you can see that in your images, which I really love. So, you know, that's definitely for those listening, you think about those things, like you don't have to do the same kind of work that, you know, delivering good clean images that can be processed for George Street and OPG and all of that. But then you can take that work and yes, your work is definitely a darker and moodier style that looks nice. You can take the same images and they would not match. And I think that's great. You know, that diversity in your images is really neat too. Anything you might want to add on, you know, just advice for somebody kind of working their way up, with OPG or in general?
Yeah, I think, I would just say be patient. You know, shoot as many weddings as you can and learn, you know, how to work with people is really important. Learn how to, you know, kind of think on your toes, and there's always going to be situations like if you're shooting a wedding and something doesn't go wrong, like something's going to go wrong. So you need to kind of have that in the back of your head to be able to kind of problem solve on the fly. And just get it right in camera. I mean, like you just said, we talked about it right now about, you know, trying to get the best clean image that you can. So there isn't much to edit on the editing side. When you send it in, they can use those really well exposed images and you're not shooting too under or too over.
Yep, exactly. And then, you know, one of the things, and I just stumbled on your Instagram, which I definitely think we want to put this in the show. And I says, really, you know, You're such a versatile photographer and, you know, you shoot weddings and I see some travel work here. And then I see that you're really into portraits and stuff like that. I'm really enjoying just scrolling through your images right now. But, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, it's definitely want to spend the last 10 minutes of this is, you did a trip to Japan with some friends.
Yeah.
And, I'm friends with you on Facebook and I kind of watched you as you were doing your travels as a photographer. traveling and photography are just, I don't care what kind of photography you do, traveling and photography is just an amazing experience. And I want you to talk about, you know, the decision and, you know, some of that. Talk about this trip that you did.
Yeah, so I've been good. This was my third trip to Japan. And this kind of stems back from when I was a chef. So I used to work for a Japanese culinary company called Plan Du C, and they're one of the largest culinary, I guess, organizations in Japan. And I was always, I've always been like really excited about Japanese food and always wanted to go. And when I worked for them, they used to do this like program where they would send some chefs over there. But because the level of chef that I was at, like I kind of like, I couldn't go because no one could replace me. So it always sucked. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go. I'm just going to buy a ticket one day. And I took my family on our first trip and I just fell in love with the country. And when I went, I took a bunch of pictures and I was like, you know what? I think I want to make like a cool coffee table book. And my goal would be to see the whole country from top to bottom in a certain time frame. Unfortunately, you know, COVID happened and I couldn't meet the time frame, but I'm still doing it. I'm still working on this book. So I called up some friends. One of them was the one that I mentioned earlier who got me into photography. And I was like, yo, dude, you want to go to Japan? He goes, yeah. I was like, all right, we're leaving next month. And we just booked our ticket and we went out there and we were there for 9 days and we did a lot. We probably did too much because it was a little stressful.
Yeah.
We went to Tokyo, Osaka, Kyoto, Nara, and then back to Tokyo. We just stayed the rest of the couple days in Osaka or in Tokyo. But yeah, I love the country. I shot some film out there. I shot some digital out there. And yeah, that's it. I mean, I'm like I said, I think the next time I'm going to go, I might put it off a year, maybe go early next year again. But I'm going to start making my way down south. Mm-hmm. To like Fukuoka area, because that's one of the places I really want to go. I'm a big ramen fan, so yeah. That's like the birthplace of ramen. So,
yeah, that's the thing about, I think, with just traveling to Asia in general for me is not only is it such a photographic experience for me, or creative or visual experience, but I love Asian food, and it doesn't really matter what it is or how weird it is or whatever. I love all of it all the time. Yeah. And I haven't been fortunate enough to get to Japan, but I've been to about 8 cities in Asia, including 4 in China. And even in China, the food was so different in each one of the cities that I went to. My favorite was when we went to Chengdu and the Sichuan region of, and the Sichuan Chinese food was just, it was the most unbelievable hot,
yeah,
spicy hot food I've ever eaten in my life. Gosh.
We went to a spot in Japan. Actually, the first night we were there, we stayed in Asakusa area, which is one of my favorite areas to stay in because it's pretty close to a lot of places. And then you have the Senjoji Temple that's right there. And we were literally like walking distance. Like our hostel was like in the behind the temple, basically. And we were walking out and we're like, let's just walk into like a random spot and get food. Like not even think about it. Let's just go in. And we picked this one spot and it was heavily Chinese influenced. And we got this bowl of spicy noodles that had Szechuan in it. And like our mouths were just, it was
your tongue
so
goes numb.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It's weird because it's heat, but mm-hmm. it's not like so overwhelmingly spicy, like a ghost pepper or something like that, where like you are crying. It is, it is pleasant, but spicy. And then all of a sudden your tongue goes numb and you can just keep eating and it's great.
Exactly.
I love that food. But traveling with friends and doing that kind of trip, without sounding, it's going to sound a little cliche because I'm asking you for it, but like things that you learned in doing and making a trip like that with friends.
I think we probably could have planned a little better. definitely. Because like, the first 3 days, like, were so stressful. I think we wanted to kill each other every single day. Mm. And then the first 3 days, it was like kind of like go, go, go. We were going to a lot of places, and we had heavy packs. Like, my buddy, and I told him too, like, this is totally his fault. So Matt, if you're listening, this is your fault. But he brought a GFX 52, which is just the camera alone is heavy. with the, I think the 86 or whatever on there, which is another heavy lens.
Oh my gosh.
He brought a Leica M11 and a Leica M6 and like in a big like Shimoda bag. And I'm like, dude, you're going to die. Crazy. Like that thing is so heavy. And I brought a lot too. I brought, I think just one film camera, two lenses and my, a Sony. And then I had a little XT1 that I brought, which I actually shot 90% of the trip on this little Fuji XT1 because it was so easy to just grab and just take some snapshots. And then I had my laptop, and I think that's what killed me, is I probably could have left the laptop at home. Because that thing was the heaviest thing in my bag for sure. But yeah, I think just planning it out, taking your time, trying to have enough time to be in one spot to kind of really enjoy it, I think is really important. Like if I go again, I think I'm just going to pick like two areas I really want to see and spend like, you know, see the small areas of that area. If that makes sense.
Yeah. It's, in the trips that I've done, mainly have been for work, whether it was when I was at WPPI and then after WPPI and usually we're around conferences. So most of the time I was pretty busy in whatever I was doing. So I didn't get to go out too much, but when I did get to go out, I was able to go with locals who took me to local spots. That was amazing. Yeah. And go to local restaurants. And you know, that was really neat. But when I travel, what I've learned from traveling is there needs to be a leader in the pack who there's always somebody who's like, I know where to go. I'm going to do all the research. And the others have to just be like, cool. Because if you don't, that's where I want to kill each other. Because the problem is that you're traveling a long way. That flight is killer. I don't care whether it's Japan or China or Hong Kong, whatever it may be. As Americans, we are not used to traveling for that long on an airplane ever. And it hurts. And so you need some recovery time from that. And so like all of a sudden you're getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning because you can't sleep if you don't do the jet lag right.
Yep. That's literally what happened our first day is we all woke up at 2 a.m. Like all of us like at the same time. Like we just woke up and we're like, well, what do we do now?
Let's just
go walk.
Let's go. And then by 10 o'clock, you're like, I'm ready to go to bed. And you're like, Yeah, you got to really, and I made the mistake last time. I just got back from Kuala Lumpur, and I made the mistake of, like, I had the time. I didn't have anything to do. So I made the mistake of saying, let's go to bed at 9 o'clock. And my friend Colin was like, no, we got to power through this. And typically what I do is I just drink until I fall asleep, until I pass out, and then, you know, wake up the next day with a hangover, and that makes it even worse. But if you stay up late, then generally you can sleep and kind of set your clock. But if you go to bed early, you're up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and then all of a sudden you're like, "What do I do?" And that can be really tough. So like, the best advice that I've learned from that is that there has to be a leader, and the others just kind of got to go along with it. Yeah. But then at some point you're like being dragged to some. It was like day four, and we were in Kuala Lumpur, and they wanted to go to this like monkey sanctuary in this place, and we get there and it smelled so bad. It was absolutely the coolest place on the planet. There are all these monkeys all over the place. I forget what it was called now, but it was hot. Of course, it's always hot.
Yeah.
In Asia, wherever you go. And then all of a sudden it was smelly and crowded. And I was like, I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah. And that's kind of what, like, I didn't want to get stuck being that guide. Because I'm like, dude, like, I've been here a lot and I don't want to be that guide. I don't want to be the tour guide. I want to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So we kind of like made, and I was joking the whole time. So one of my friends that went, we called him the navigator because he had the only cell phone that was like working really well out there. Like mine was not working at all. And my buddy was having a hard time with his. So like, you're the navigator, dude. All right. You're running the train. You're telling us what train to get on.
Oh,
like,
dear Lord.
I was like, I'll pick the spot, but you put the address in and we'll go.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. And then there always is the problem. Like my whole trip, I didn't have a phone the entire time because I'm on an AT&T business plan, and it was difficult. Anyway. Yeah. But yeah, so I actually have one more question for you. I see a couple of film cameras behind you. You talked about that a little bit. If I am somebody new who's getting into it and I want to shoot film, somebody brought it up in the Facebook group the other day about shooting weddings with it, but that I digress. Where do you start? What do you recommend as far as dipping your toe in?
I would say the best place maybe just to start, get a point and shoot. They're really popular right now. You could find them relatively cheap. My wife actually stole all of mine because she's trying to learn film right now and just learn photography. And that really helps with like learning composition and getting shots and like, because you have to be obviously with film, you have to be a little more thoughtful.
Yeah.
With the point and shoots, it's easy to get like carried away and just do snapshots. And then once you start developing it, you're like, maybe I'd take my time a little more on those photos.
That's interesting. So most people would start with like an SLR, and you're saying go with a point and shoot.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to buy my Yashica T4, let me know.
Ooh, that's a good one. I had one.
I have two of them. I loved it. I used to shoot weddings with them.
I have this one right here. It's a Pentax Super ME. And This thing is really cool because it is... you could shoot the entire thing in automatic and it does a great job. You don't have to worry about metering your light. You don't have to worry about anything, but then you also have a little bit of manual control, and it's the light meter inside is really, really easy to read. It basically tells you where to set your shutter, all that. So this thing is really cool. So the Pentax Super ME, and the images that come out of it are really great too.
That's neat. Okay, cool. Last question, then I'll let you go. Favorite film that you like to shoot with?
Portrait for nighttime stuff. Cine Still 800 for sure. Okay. And then for anything else, I do Portrait 400.
Yep.
Is my favorite film.
Awesome. Cool. All right. Well, thank you for sharing your stories with us. It was good getting to know you a little bit more. As always, thank you for being a great OPG photographer for us. And thank you for, again, sharing your stories with us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right. That was the fastest 30 minutes I think I've ever done with any of the photographers. I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. If you'd like to be on this show, please let us know. jgroup@orionphotogroup.com, or ask somebody in whatever your emails in the company, you can find me. I'd love to hear your success stories. And if you do, you'll get a just like David's going to get today, a $25 B&H gift card for joining us. And again, thanks for being on this week's episode of Success Stories. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.
All right, that'll do it for this episode featuring OPG's Best of the Best. Would you like to be featured in an upcoming episode, or do you have a suggestion for somebody you'd like to hear from in our little community? Please email me, jgroup2p@orionphotogroup.com. That's jgroup@orionphotogroup.com. I look forward to hearing from you and hearing your suggestions. We hope that you enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to hearing from you and your story. That's it for now. We'll see you on the next episode. Have a great day.